lots of things going on this planet, and we're checking in with Craig Hewlett on this next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Presidential campaigns, ISIS, all kinds of things happening on this planet. Craig Hewlett, he's the one we turn to when we need to talk about some geopolitical issues, security issues, terrorism, and here he is for 2 hours on Coast to Coast. Craig, thanks for joining us tonight. Appreciate it.
Thank you, George, and I wanted to thank you separately. I picked up three different hosts over the last couple of months off of your show, so I wanted to thank you. Stephen Cates is one of them with his show, so I wanted to thank you right up front.
Well, things are. As a matter of fact, I was doing my chat tonight with our Coast Insiders, and several of them were asking me about your book, The Hydra of Carnage, asking where they can get it. Is it still in print or not?
Yeah, I've still got a small quantity left. They can get it off of our website, craigbhewlett.com.
Okay, perfect, perfect. Well, first of all, your reaction to tonight's presidential State of the Union address, his sayonara song.
Well, I'm really glad to see him go, to be honest with
really?
You.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, I think, you know, when everybody applauded his arrival on the scene, a Nobel Peace Prize winner, a lawyer, a constitutionalist, a professor of constitutional law, I don't think anybody thought for a minute. My reaction was immediate. I knew that he wasn't who he said he was, and I said, you'll see what happens in the next 8 years, and everything that Bush before him and Clinton before him had set in motion, he will be blamed for it. And that's precisely what the schemers at the level of global economics and global empire sought to achieve. Everything's going to be blamed on Obama, so we run around and start searching for somebody to save us. And, of course, Jeb Bush and Hillary Clinton, long scheduled to be our choices. But I do want to explain something. I had to do this on Carl Nelson's show. It came up about accidentally. I'm not predicting Jeb Bush will be president. I don't make predictions. Okay, I'm an analyst, the same way they do
right.
the weather.
Right.
90% today could change to 50% tomorrow. What I was trying to get across for the last 9 years when George Bush Jr. was still in the White House is that the elite are planning to put Jeb Bush in the White House with money, buying votes, and a corrupt electoral system in the primaries. I said that Hillary Clinton was already decided that she would be the one he would run against because she's vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
Now, none of this is, you know, Craig Hewlett says this and he's going to be wrong. That's not what I'm doing. So I'm going to explain to your audience what I explained to Carl's audience inside the Beltway in Washington, D.C. Research and analysis, to me, is like Che Guevara and Mao and Lenin and Thomas Paine would argue. It's a revolutionary act. Research and analysis is a revolutionary act. You're ignoring the status quo. You're independently researching what they're telling you is the truth, and your analysis comes out differently. This is exactly what governments don't want to see. And all I'm doing is taking my argument, my analysis, the way a lawyer would to take it into the courtroom to make my argument. I'm trying to convince people that this is a setup. This is theater. You're being lied to. But nothing happens in government by accident. Nothing. If you look right now, the name escapes me, but there's an author, the editor of Newsweek, is writing a book about George Bush and the Bush family. It's just come out. And he admits during the interview on Medved, he admits that he started the book 9 years ago, and it's just being released now.
Jeez.
Now, is that a coincidence that he started a book while George Bush Jr. was in the White House to promote the dynasty of George Bush Sr., Jr., and coincidentally, simultaneously, when Jeb Bush is running for the White House? No.
Perfect timing.
Perfect timing. So what I'm saying is I am doing everything I can, and I have been for years, to make it clear that Jeb Bush cannot take the White House. The American people have to wake up and see this manipulation. Now, I don't care who wins. I honestly don't care. It doesn't make any difference to me. I don't look at things that way.
Well, when you say you don't care,
because it
explain
doesn't matter.
That. Okay.
That's it doesn't matter if it's Cruz, if Hillary were to be win, she gets indicted, Obama will pardon her, she'll never do jail time. Let's grow up about our politics and stop being quite as immature as we've been to date. These are ruthless men. Obama is a ruthless man. Jeb Bush is ruthless. We should know by now how ruthless Hillary Clinton is.
What about Trump? Does he fit into that?
Trump is an anomaly, only in that he's a malignant narcissist. And he'll do anything to promote, self-promote himself mm-hmm. in the face of enormous odds.
I think he's having fun right now.
Oh, heavens, yes. Most malignant narcissists are having fun with us. That's the problem. Does he really want to be president? Oh, I can't answer that. I wouldn't mind him being president, but for the same reason I wanted Ross Perot to stay in the race and split the two parties into an independent.
Sure.
33% of the vote to each one. They have to take the election to the Congress. And, oh, my gosh, all these talk show hosts will discover, I guess we really aren't just Democrats and Republicans. There's something else going on. And that's the only thing Donald Trump can achieve.
Well, now, what happens, Craig, if during these primaries, the Iowa caucuses, the New Hampshire primary, what happens if Trump starts pulling away there? I still think it's going to be a brokered convention. And I think you're right. I think Jeb Bush is going to get the nomination.
Well, that's because there's people out there that most people, unless you became aware of him early on in the early days, going back 25 years, there are people out there, a lot of people out there, like Karl Rove. And Karl Rove is out there right now, and he's hitting all the states, and he's basically bribing, buying, extolling, extorting, whatever it takes to get Bush the nomination. He's going after the delegates. This is common practice. And where it's really crucial, you'll see people like Henry Kissinger, David Rockefeller. This isn't conspiracy theory, okay?
Mm-hmm.
This is the way our politics has been run as a two-party system.
Well, if he wins in the caucus, if he shows up in New Hampshire, all of a sudden, when he shouldn't, I'm going to say, you know what? He's on his way.
He's on his way. But it'll be money that's buying it. It'll be money that puts him in the White House. And I'm not saying, you know, I hope I'm wrong. I don't want to see another Bush or a Clinton, but I don't see anybody challenging the machinery that I've come to understand for 30 years.
I think you're right. I've got one of our predictors, John Hoag, who's going to be on with me on Thursday. He has said since the get-go, Hillary versus Jeb Bush. Now, he does it through the eyes of a psychic, and he's a darn good one, Craig, but he's been saying that for 4 years.
Well, you know, no matter how you come to the truth, if you really are seeking the truth, I don't care where you begin, you're going to all end up on the same team, if you're honest with yourself.
Yeah.
So that doesn't surprise me very much. But, again, this is not what I want to see happen. This is what's going to happen because the two-party system is a completely corrupted system, guaranteed to leave in the hands of the elite, the oligarchy, one of the two parties. They don't care which, they buy them both, but it'll be people that are malleable to the system, and nothing will ever change.
The president tonight ignored the 10 sailors that have been basically taken by the Iranians. He didn't mention it at all. How come?
Well, I think, and this is my opinion, just watching him all these years now, his Tuesday morning meetings, where he decides who in the entire world gets to die by a cruise missile or a drone. It's called Bloody Tuesday inside the Beltway. Obama does not respect the military. He hasn't mentioned the 22,000 veterans, combat veterans, that have come home, suffer PTSD, and have been summarily removed with a less than honorable discharge, so they
can't get their benefits.
Treatment at the VA hospitals.
Yeah.
22 suicides a day. American veterans, homelessness, incarceration, abandonment. Our veterans are being treated far worse today than I was as a Vietnam veteran. In fact, I look back, I'm being spit on at the airport.
I remember those days. Craig, stay with us. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with more. You know, we had our coast-to-coast chat tonight with Coast Insiders, and Buck from Limestone, West Virginia, wanted me to read this to you. So I will. It says, I recently had open-heart surgery and really do not know how I would have survived the hospital chaos without the archives and the earbuds of being a Coast insider. Turned a lot of hospital personnel onto Coast, which was a plus. When I was discharged, they were listening to Coast at the nurse's station in the ICU. That's the absolute truth. You can use this. His real name's Dan. Thank you. Okay, here we go. Back with Craig Hewlett. Craig, the Iranians taking 10 sailors. I assume they're going to release them, but you just never know. Why would they want to even keep them?
They wouldn't want to keep them. I think they're flexing their muscles. And like I said early on when this so-called agreement was made with Iran, they're not going to stick to the agreement. I think what Obama was doing, and I think this is bearing out the accuracy of it, Obama was doing what he was doing with Iran in hopes that Iran wouldn't go further into the Russian, India, Chinese camp, which had just recently, just before the incident, signed a first-ever military agreement. China is opening a military base in northern Africa as we speak.
That's right, first one.
The first one. So, you know, there's developments going on, and the American people really don't understand geopolitics anymore because it's only been this kind of political setup since the Soviet Union collapsed. Since 1990, everything has changed, and it's very difficult to keep up at this point. So if you weren't up to speed when Bush Sr. was in the White House, it's pretty difficult to stay abreast of what's going on. But we are at war. America, unfortunately, an America that doesn't represent you and I any longer, but an America that the effects of what happens will affect us domestically. There's a war going on. The Chinese want to back the yuan with gold. Russia want to issue currency in the Balkans with nine different nations backed by gold. The BRICS nation combined, China's been accepted into the IMF. These are wars on the Federal Reserve note. Now, that doesn't mean it's a war on you and I, but it is a war on the global regime of economic interdependence, the corporate elite, the corporate regime that has taken away American sovereignty, and every trade agreement takes away all the rest of the nation's sovereignty. That's what this is about. Russia, China, India, South Africa, some of the Latin American countries, they're not going to tolerate the invasion of U.S. Western military might and regime change any longer. Now, what is Obama going to do? Nothing. Obama's going to leave the White House. I suggest that he will move to the Arab Emirates in Dubai.
You really think so?
Yes. He's going to buy a $5 million house on the seaside, and one day you'll see pictures of him in white robes looking like a Saudi prince.
You really think so?
Yes, sir.
Wow.
I do. I think he's a liar. I think he's a brilliant liar, much, much better than Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton was a terrible liar.
Yeah, he was.
He was pitiful. Anybody that spent 10 minutes on the street as a human being or a cop on the beat could tell very rarely could Bill Clinton lie and you couldn't see the tells. Obama is a master at lying because he is, in my opinion, a true sociopath.
So what's going on with terrorism? You know, some people say it's made up, it's not real, yet people are getting killed. Something's happening. What's your take, Craig?
Say that again, the first part.
People say that terrorism isn't real, that it's all concocted.
Well, it is to some degree. There's a theory in criminology that was formulated by a criminologist out of South Africa. His name was Stanley Cohen. He came up with a theory of what is called moral panic in criminology, and it's where the government, working in hand with the major media, create enemies, and to be believable enough, they create enemies that are untrue. These are untrue enemies, but they create an enemy believable enough to the American people in this instance that we will let the government move in with law enforcement, rules, regulations, Guantanamo Bay camps, brutal. Street enforcement is going to get far, far worse. That's what we're seeing with ISIS. Everybody forgets that Wesley Clark, Craig Hewlett, and a dozen other CIA and intelligence analysts talked about ISIS in the very beginning, that it was created by the United States two or three major allies in the intelligence community.
Oh, by the way, update. Breaking news. The 10 American sailors being held by Iran are now being questioned. So they haven't let them go yet.
Well, Iran isn't an ignorant nation. You have to understand, these people have played politics for 3,000 years. They're not likely to play this lightly. And Vladimir Putin, he will back them. Not because he's a friend of them, not because he's evil. Vladimir Putin is taking on the global regime, the corporate regime that I've talked about for 30 years. He knows what it is, and he's drawn a line in the sand. China is backing him, and he just said recently ISIS was the creation of the West, and he named at the G20 meeting in Turkey which nation states and corporations were buying the bootleg oil from ISIS, and it didn't get any American press.
Well, that is something I've been talking about for months now, Craig. Who's buying the oil? What banks are behind it?
Well, that's exactly what Putin did at the G20 meeting. And as it took place, he showed slides, he made demonstrations, he showed the intel to the G20, he pointed fingers at which nation states, corporations, and individuals were involved in it. He named them. He went around. None of that got covered in the American press.
I mean, they've got to have ships.
They've got thousands of tankers, ships, everything. Excuse me.
Yeah, that's okay. And
none of this would be happening without a NATO ally like Turkey.
And who are the workers, the oil workers, you know, working on the rigs, the platforms, and the oil wells?
Anybody that will pay them. Most of them are foreign workers. That's what America doesn't understand, is when we start prospecting oil and building the wells, the delivery system, the refineries, the American corporations hire people from the Philippines, from Malaysia, to do the work.
Hard, cheap labor.
And if they get blown up or killed by terrorists, if the pipeline is destroyed, nobody cares. The other part is you and I pay for it because we have U.S. Western government insurance covering their losses. They don't pay for the losses. You and I pay for the losses. You really have to see the maps differently. When you look at a map and you see Syria with a border with Turkey and Iraq, in the minds of the elite, the ruling elite right now, what are referred to as the oligarchy, not just by me, but by two professors in Switzerland, Martin Gillens and Benjamin Page. Look them up. They tested a theory of American politics and proved satisfactory under peer review that we are run by an oligarchy, and they explain why. But you have to understand, that means the very system they're talking about, that I've been talking about, means nation-state boundaries and sovereignty are already history. We're not losing it. It's over.
They are talking about $20 oil, $15 oil. How low can it go?
Well, Saudi Arabia has declared war on its competitors. They can do this for a very long time.
And just put them out of business. Just put them out of business.
It's already putting out of business American domestic oil production.
Yes.
Yes, it's hurting some of the majors. They'll recover. But we are at war. We're at war with the dollar. We're at war over oil prices. We're at war over international finance. We're at war about sovereign nation state sovereignty and who decides domestically.
Shouldn't we be seeing even lower prices at the pump, and we're not?
Well, we should, but we all know that that's a manipulation and a lie.
Of course.
The prices will go up in the spring when the Winnebagoes are broken out.
Yeah, that's right.
But you understand, nothing we see is true any longer, and it hasn't been for 30 years. It's not. 30 years ago, it wasn't this bad. I mean, there were people in America 30 years ago that would tune into a show like this, and our phones would ring for 2 weeks.
That's true.
But that's not true any longer. 30 years of this, I think, is flat wore the American people out. We
desensitized.
Do nothing but backpedal and lose.
Yeah, they're desensitized now.
So when I start arguing about the sovereignty of the nation state being lost, people start immediately intervening, and they want me to shut up and say what the solution is. I'm sorry. I have no solution. Don't ask me for a solution. I'm neither a tyrant nor a fool. I don't believe there is a solution. I'm a Nietzschean, and you probably don't understand really what that means. But as an existentialist, I understand that the things happen in the world you can't do anything about. You can you know, worry beads and pray to Allah. You can do whatever mm-hmm. you want. But in the end, certain things will happen because certain other things have already taken place.
And there's no sense getting sick over it.
No, it isn't worth losing sleep over.
No.
But I spent 30 years this as my bedside reading, and I can tell you, our nation state sovereignty is history. And if someone in the House and the Senate does not come forward, somebody running for president, for instance, and tell the American people some bald-faced truths, then I have no respect for them. I keep hearing Elizabeth Warren and Rand Paul, and I'm sorry. If they don't tell the American people that the House and the Senate in the United States have abdicated their authority to negotiate trade agreements in violation of the Constitution they swore to uphold, then I'm not going to sit here and say, yeah, but Elizabeth Warren cares, and Rand Paul, I think he really cares. No, none of them care. None of them care enough to come out and say, I'm a member of a corrupt oligarchy myself. Because we're not negotiating trade agreements on behalf of the American people. Are bankers, lawyers, and lobbyists at the World Trade Organization are usurping U.S. sovereignty. They're going to tell us what we can and can't do, who we can and can't sue, and the price of goods and services forever.
When does the New World Order truly kick in?
It already has. It already has. When the international governing organizations, IGOs, begin to dictate who can sue over what issues, and when our own Supreme Court says that a corporation that's making these decisions for us without the consent or participation of the constitutionally bound Congress, it's already over. All we're doing now is seeing how deep the slippery slope runs. But pretty soon you won't be able to even question the meat, the fish, in a package that you purchase.
GMOs, everything.
These corporations, like Archer Daniels Midland, Monsanto, these corporations make Hitler's political organization look like lightweights. There's no greater tyranny than a monopoly, multinational corporation.
How did we let it happen? It didn't slip in.
No, I think Carol Quigley, if you read Tragedy and Hope, when he gets to the part about the 60s and stuff, he kind of points out that right after World War II, the American people were pretty wore out. An awful lot of young men, good men, a great generation in my opinion, were slaughtered. And I think after World War II, at least Quigley points out, you know, toaster ovens, TV, refrigerators, we were looking to party, and we didn't want to face reality anymore. But the corporate businessmen that FDR put into power, he knew they would be ruthless, money-hungry, and reap enormous profits illegally.
And they did.
But he knew they would. His attitude was, let them reap rewards. We'll win the war against Germany and Japan, and then I'll get rid of these guys. But he died.
And there was nobody left to
Truman
fix it.
Wasn't capable of facing those businessmen because he was a little small businessman himself, and he looked at GE and Ford Motor and GM and AT&T that they were free enterprisers. They were the embodiment of Adam Smith. And Adam Smith himself said nothing could be further than the truth. You let corporations get this large and allow them to create monopolies in any industry, he said combinations, he would call them combinations, would occur to repress wages, health insurance on labor, and monopolize an industry and destroy competition. Adam Smith said that, not Karl Marx.
And that was a long time ago.
Yes. So, you know, it's sad that America won the war. And these men became powerful, but they were men you would readily recognize, like, for instance, Prescott Bush, Brown Brothers Harriman, the bank that was indicted by the Treasury Department during the war for trading with the enemy.
It helped the Nazis.
Germany.
That's right. He funded the Nazis for a while, didn't they?
And when the war ended, they dropped the case against him. Hans Morgenthau personally dropped the case against Brown Brothers Harriman and Prescott Bush. But the American people, after World War II, my father was one of them. He was one of them. He simply wouldn't allow politics in the home. They couldn't be discussed. It wasn't allowed. He read Zane Grey and comic books and watched football. Everybody wanted to party. I get it. I understand.
Right.
But now we are suffering the backlash, the real blowback.
But I think, Craig, people are the same. They don't want to know about it. They want to stick their heads in the sand and pretend it's not happening.
Well, Taylor Caldwell, a great novelist, wrote Captains and the King, and wrote a lot about the multinational defense contractors, the warmongers of World War I and World War II. She suggested that the American people would not become alert to what's happening in this country until they were burying the dead. And then they would ask, why didn't someone warn us?
Mm-hmm. But it's too late then.
It is too late, and I think it's too late now. I'm not going to stop doing what I do until I'm dead, but I'm not going to lie to your audience or you, George. I think it is over, and we're going to have to suffer some terrible times at the hands of these corporate oligarchs. We're going to suffer, and they are ruthless. I'm telling you, I was in the boardrooms with them. I worked for Jack Metcalf. I saw their reaction to Jack Metcalf when he opposed policies coming out of those boardrooms to be implemented by Congress illegally, trade agreements. And Jack stood up to him. But every time he gave one of my speeches, the limos would be pulling up at the Everett office.
That's right. I think those days are gone, Craig.
Yeah, I don't see Rand Paul doing anything the way his father did it. And I don't blame him. I'm not going to blame him. I think it's gone so far that there really is a genuine fear of speaking out. It doesn't even have to be genuine.
No,
the
I think
fear of speaking out, if, even if it's just a notion.
Are you concerned?
Speaking out, me?
Yeah.
Not the least.
Why not?
I've got a lot of friends in the military, the intelligence community. I've been a consultant to ATF, DEA, and for a bit, Secret Service, on and off for 30 years. You know, if they want to come for me, it's going to be an embarrassing effort, I have to tell you.
Well, you'll be calling us first on the air while they're chasing you.
Well, everybody understands how I live. I live out in the wilderness, way out in the wilderness, and I have 7 chows. I got the best alarm system you can imagine.
You sure do. Stay with us. We're going to come back in a moment, Craig, and take some phone calls with you. And, of course, Craig's website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. And you can get a few of his books that are left, The Hydra of Carnage. Somebody said on Amazon, somebody was trying to sell one to make a fortune. Craig's got them for you on his website. Not a lot, but it's well worth reading. We're going to come back in a moment. If you need to email me, george@coasttocoastam.com. And, yep, we're into social media. So like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Right here on Coast to Coast AM. One more hour to go with Craig Hewlett. We'll take your phone calls as we continue chatting with him about world events that affect you, whether you know it or not. Okay, this hour we're going to continue chatting with Craig Hewlett. I've got a couple more questions I want to ask him before we get to your calls on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, back we are with Craig Hewlett and your calls. Craig, I wanted to chat with you a little bit about journalist and columnist Seymour Hersh, about some of the things he's reported. Of course, he has always said that the Osama bin Laden raid was a big lie. But he's involved a little bit in this Assad situation, too, isn't he?
Yeah. Seymour Hersh, I believe, is one of a really rare commodity in the world. He lives a life, you know, in a sense, I live the same kind of lifestyle. It can be very dark and brooding and depressing, and there's not much room for joy. But he has the character and the stamina to still do the job. And I admire him for that because, you know, I've always said, what's more important than truth? And the answer is stamina.
Yeah. And he's got that. He's got that.
And everything that he has ever written, I have included in a paper on a weekly basis. His quotes are on my website. And he'd be the first one to say, everything about the bin Laden raid was a lie, and I agree. I also know this. 17 of the SEAL members, very shortly thereafter, all died simultaneously in a Chinook aircraft. And nobody that's ever worked in special ops or in the military would ever dare put 17 elite SEALs on the same chopper at the same time.
Nope.
It's never done.
No, that's stupid.
That's stupid. So they were assassinated, and they were assassinated because the risk of those SEALs would be that they would come forward and say, well, guess what? The whole mission was a lie. Bin Laden wasn't there when we got there. And the Pakistanis knew he was there the whole time.
But we did kill him. Sometime,
well, we
somewhere.
We killed somebody on that day, and we buried someone at sea. Whether it was bin Laden, we'll never know. Because, you know, I don't know who that fellow is you're interviewing. That when I hear on the phone, you're talking to somebody about the Kennedy assassination, and whether it's, can I ask you, who is that?
Gosh, I think... I'm going to have to check because I had like three different ones.
Okay, well, you know what? It's not important.
Okay.
But the thing that he says is that we suffered a coup d'etat, and we did. There's no question, and it wasn't just the United States. That was a whole decade. In fact, there was a book published called The Decade of Assassinations. People were being killed all over the world. The Diem brothers, there were attempts on Godal. There were murders of parliament members in England, Australia, Jack Kennedy, Bobby Kennedy, Medgar Evers, Martin Luther King, and you think this is all lone nut guns? You think that every time Craig Hewlett says that there's an oligarchy, an elite that run this government, do you really believe this is a conspiracy theory? Let me read you one sentence. It's called Testing Theories of American Politics. It's by Gillens and Page, 2014.
Okay.
Multivariate analysis indicates that economic elites, organized groups representing business interests, have substantial independent impacts on U.S. government policy, while average citizens and mass-based interest groups have little or no influence. The results provide substantial support for theories of economic elite domination. That is peer-reviewed academic analysis at its best. And in this paper, Gillens and Page, and later their book, titled Affluence and Influence, they basically prove, as professors creating a theory, an argument in the courtroom, like Jeffrey Spence would do, they prove that we are living with an oligarchy, and you can forget democracy. Mm-hmm. Now, as I say it, I'll be called a conspiracy theorist.
Yeah, that's
right.
But
I'm telling you, I don't base my work on some abstract theory from the John Birch Society. These are the people I read, I study, and argue.
Where does Hirsch get his sources?
He's one of those lucky guys. Actually, I was for a short time, in my younger days. They know they could go to him, and he'll never give them up.
Yeah.
And he's been doing it for so long, all the way back to
old-time
the Vietnam War.
Yeah.
That's who his sources are. He's got such a credible presence that people will come to him, that if they were discovered, their name were to get out, they would probably land smack in jail for the rest of their life.
And he has no axe to grind.
No, he doesn't. He doesn't care about Democrats, Republicans. He doesn't care about anything except the truth of any given issue. And that's all I care about. That's why so many people can't stand to listen to me. I'm thankful that you put me on the air.
You
but
know,
I know I'm breaking hearts out here.
I get requests for you to come on more than anybody right now.
But I know I'm also a heartbreaker. I see grown men cry in my public lectures. Nobody wants to think that our government could be so vile and corrupt.
My father, had he been alive, would have been crying had he heard you tonight. He doesn't want to believe that. He was a World War II veteran. You couldn't tell him anything about the country doing this or that. Most of those folks and those older guys during that era, and women, they didn't want to hear that.
Well, they don't want it today either. That's why 93 million permanently unemployed Americans, a third of the population, will never vote again or participate in the economic structure of our country.
No, they're done.
You want to know what's going to kill it, what will end it? And I'm telling you, this is going to happen, not as a prediction or a crystal ball. It's a policy formulation that's been around for 30 years. It's being introduced in Ireland, Sweden, Switzerland, the Baltics are talking about it. A permanent income for everybody over the age of 18.
What do you mean, a permanent income?
Every month they would get a check for $1,000 for the rest of their life.
From who?
A universal income by the government. Do you understand what that would do? If you legalize marijuana in all 50 states and other drugs...
And give them money, give them money to buy it.
And you give them $1,000 a month. Do you understand? That'll bring this country to its knees. There will be no chance of a revolution in thought, let alone theory or fact.
Of course not. You bought everybody off.
That's right. And they are going to do that.
Isn't that what
they're going to do it.
Isn't that what the Saudis are doing with their own population now?
Exactly what they're doing.
Yeah.
And they're one of the most primitive, evil empires out there, the Saudi regime. And they are the Bush family's best friends.
They just executed 46 people.
They crucify women, for heaven's sakes.
Yeah. Yet that kingdom is hands-off.
Well, that's because the nexus between Israel and Saudi Arabia is a balancing act by Western corporations to control the rest of the region. We do their bidding. America, Pentagon, is the tip of the sword for Israel and Saudi Arabia. Why do you think all these other countries are falling? That was planned in 1990 under Bush Sr.'s tutorship at the White House. He held the meeting in April of 1990. I've got the paperwork. I've got the names of the people that attended. I've got the documents they published.
But the goal was always to get Iran back.
The goal was always to take Iran out, but they said at this time, now that the Soviet Union has collapsed, these are the seven nations we're going to take out in this order. Iraq, Afghanistan, Syria, Libya. The last one is Iran.
Yep. Leave the big one for last.
But you understand, these are Western corporations using the Pentagon for a corporate empire that has no relationship to you and I as a domestic population. What it does to us economically, it'll destroy this economy, your living standard. It'll destroy this country domestically. But they don't care.
Because you're going to be doing it worldwide.
Because it's worldwide. Yep. When you do away with the sovereign borders of all these nation states and you view the world from a globalist perspective, those regions change. Those borders change. It's where's the oil? Where's the water? Where's the arable land?
Yep.
That's why AFRICOM was created with Rodriguez, General Rodriguez at the head of it, only 5 years ago. They know that no other power can go into Africa and dominate it like the Pentagon can.
Let's take some calls. Ed in Philadelphia, wildcard line. Go ahead, Ed.
Hi, George. I wanted to ask Mr. Hewlett if he knew anything about Jeb Bush attending the last Bilderberg meeting and how historically that's how they select the next U.S. president. Also, Bev Harris of Black Box Voting, who's normally a Democrat and supports Democrat, said that Romney, his votes weren't even counted in the last election. She's honest enough to admit it and said so to Alex Jones. Also, Rand Paul, in his defense, they blew his Rand Paul Federal Reserve Transparency Act bill out of the Senate today. It was to audit the Fed, and they just totally voted it down. And
right. Well, his father led the change. They introduced that every year for 30 years. They've done it. The same kind of legislation to audit Fort Knox to see where the gold went.
Right.
When I some of these people I knew so well, I sat next to them while Eldridge Cleaver and General Keegan were speaking on the dais where Ron Paul and I were the next speakers. And back then, 30 years ago, we all did kind of feel, okay, maybe not me so much, all did kind of feel a hope that if we keep pursuing the legislation, we keep pursuing the legal means to bring this system and rein it in, if we keep doing this long enough, the American people will wake up and back us. And all I can say is miserable failure. We were all wrong. We were all dead wrong.
And also, what do you feel about how the votes aren't even counted? They just announced the new president.
That's a problem with these electronic votings now.
Yes, yeah, and I don't, it wouldn't surprise me if they would rig the vote. They'll do whatever it takes. Like I said, you know, whoever that is you're interviewing about the Kennedy assassination, is it too late to look into it? You know, Oliver Stone and I became friends over Jim Garrison. That's how Oliver met me, is I was talking to Jim Garrison for 3 years before Oliver Stone even knew he existed. And Jim Garrison gave Oliver my name. That's how we hooked up with JFK. And all I could tell you is Jim Garrison was as angry those last 3 years of his life.
He
died
sure
shortly
was.
After the movie came out.
Yeah.
He was as angry then as he was in 1963.
He just couldn't get anybody to accept.
Do you know what he told me?
What'd he say?
When I contacted him, that would be 1988. When I contacted him, I picked up the phone. I looked at his book, read it, looked him up a little bit. I picked up the phone. I called New Orleans and asked to speak to the judge in the Superior Court, Jim Garrison. They said, hold. They put him on. You get Garrison. And I introduced myself, and he said, do you know what, Mr. Hewlett? You know what I have to tell you right now? In all these years, I have received not one phone call from anyone.
Wow. Isn't that amazing?
There's something
you were
really, really wrong with this country and what's being done to it. And there is a metaphysics to it. Even though I'm a Nietzschean, I am not void of the ideas of metaphysics and its capabilities. When I mentioned the moral panic earlier, the criminological concept, moral panics are used by distorting the mass media and creating enemies believable enough to aid the status quo government in taking away your rights. That's the theory itself. A book like Report from Iron Mountain had to be discredited immediately when it was released back in the 70s and 80s. The people that talked about it had to be lied to and called conspiracy theorists. It has to be contained because nobody can literally believe that the government does nothing but conspire against its people. It does nothing but that.
Is that what it's for these days?
And the report from Iron Mountain was an abstract of a meeting that took place. Leonard Lewin published it. He wouldn't tell who the real author was. And then immediately, everybody that used that book, even though it was people like Seymour Martin Lipset, the sociologist, he used the text in his works. I've got dozens of those authors that quoted from that text. But Victor Novasky at The Nation literally organized progressive left professors to denounce anybody that even mentioned that book. And when Leonard Lewin died, you know what Victor Novasky, the editor and publisher of The Nation, did?
What was that?
He went public and said he wrote it.
Jeez. We should get Hirsch on the show.
Yes.
Let's do that.
I would definitely get Mr. Hirsch on the show.
Let's go to Carlos in Carson, California now. Carlos, go ahead.
Yes, good evening, Mr. Helen. Listen, Great Britain, Israel, France, Germany, Saudi Arabia, the United States formed a military-industrial complex, and so they need convenient enemies to wage war against and produce armaments. And sure enough, the Saudi royal family for many, many years has been financing the terrorists on behalf of the military-industrial complex. They financed the Muslim Brotherhood, and they financed many of their financing ISIS. And then, of course, you got also John McCain out there who heads the International Republican Institute, which funded revolutions in Haiti to oust the Aristide, and they funded the revolution in Honduras about 3 years ago to oust Zelaya. And, of course, McCain was meeting with ISIS here couple of years ago. I saw a video before ISIS became prominent. He was meeting with those people. Why? Because he's probably sending money in conjunction with USA, the CIA.
Okay, before you go one step further, everything this gentleman is saying, there is document proof of it. I have on my website proof that the State Department, our State Department, sold the fleet of Toyota trucks to ISIS.
I believe that.
It's not a myth. We're not making things
and
up.
This wasn't the captured. This wasn't the captured Iraqi soldier stuff either.
No. This is. But the American people don't want to listen to bad news. This is all bad news.
Craig, you and I were talking about this snake-long road of ISIS trucks as they were waving at people. Not one drone, not one jet took them out.
Do you understand what that would look like from a satellite?
Oh, my God.
What target it makes?
Just a long, winding snake.
And they're all the same age, make, model, and they bought them from our State Department.
With white tennis shoes.
With white
all
tennis shoes and black. Who wears black in the Middle East?
Nobody.
Nobody. And I'm telling you, the reason they're wearing black with the white tennis shoes is so they look like scary gangbangers to white Christians in America.
That's right.
It scares them.
That's right.
I know. There's some women out here that are afraid of me because I wear all black.
And it's getting... Well, here's the thing. If you believe these reports, ISIS is now in 20 countries and growing and growing.
That's this nonsense. Untrue.
My God. Who could organize something like that this fast? Nobody. Exactly. It's got to be something organized.
And the gentleman who was speaking, Saudi Arabia funds it. But you know what he didn't get to say? The evidence, without question, points to Saudi Arabia perpetrating 9/11.
You really believe that?
That's no question.
Well, I've had guests on who believe that, too.
There's no question about it, because why would Lloyd's of London name Saudi Arabian banks, intelligence, businesses, the royal family, when they discovered they were going to have to pay out millions of dollars to the families whose people died in the airline crashes? Lloyd's of London did their homework.
Yep.
When you read the lawsuit, and by the way, I read it, copied it, and printed it out, and made sure it was saved, because 4 days later, when that lawsuit was filed, Saudi Arabia negotiated
a
plea bargain, and it disappeared.
It was gone. It was gone. Greg, stay with us. We're going to come back with final phone calls with you, Craig B. Hewlett, our special guest. I know some of the things you hear you probably don't want to hear, but he says it the way he feels. We'll be back. Well, next hour, Bob Mitchell joins us with his work, What If? Close Encounters of the Unusual Kind, as we talk about strange things. We're going to come back in a moment with Craig Hewlett. We'll take final calls, too, on Coast to Coast AM. Craig Hewlett with us. Craig, what is the breaking point for people? At what point do they say enough is enough, or do they?
I don't believe in America there is a breaking point other than their wallet. When it finally hits them in the wallet, I think they'll wake up. But, of course, it'll be too late by then.
It sure will be. And, again, like you say, there's not much we can do.
Well, like I said, you know, you can't do politics. Pericles said, if you don't pay attention to politics, politics is still going to be interested in you. And if you don't do demographics, you can't understand what's going on. We have almost 100 million working-age individuals permanently unemployed. They will never look for a job. Their life is over. They're not even trying. That's one-third of the adult population. Is there an outcry? Is there anger? 22,000 veterans were given less than honorable discharges because the VA doesn't want to treat them for post-traumatic stress and brain damage from IEDs. 22,000. Every day, 22 veterans, combat veterans, commit suicide. When you fight a protracted war, if you're a guerrilla movement like Che Guevara, Castro, against the state regime, you want a protracted war, because a protracted war wears out the enemy, and that's your opportunity to win. So explain to me why the United States Pentagon would be fighting three protracted wars on the two different continents, the Middle East and North Africa, when you can't win a protracted war. Our troops are doing sometimes 9 tours. I got 6 guys out here where I live that have all done 2 to 5 tours. And they're wrecks. They're not married. All they have is a dog. They live in a cabin. They took a beating. It is absolutely defenseless what Obama and Bush Jr. and Clinton and Bush Sr. have done to this country and to our military. Because you know what it stinks of? Somebody, and I have no evidence of this, but it's beginning to stink a little bit around here. I'm beginning to get the sense that there might be some people at the highest levels of the global corporate regime that want America to lose a world war.
Why?
Because it would eliminate the most vibrant domestic democracy on earth that the earth has ever seen that could challenge the oligarchies, the royal families, regimes like Saudi Arabia and Great Britain. They still have a queen, for heaven's sake.
And support her.
Yes, and we were the only country on earth. And I hate to say it, but there is one man that spoke to this issue for 40 years, and he went to jail.
Who was that?
Lyndon LaRouche.
LaRouche. Ah, forgot about old LaRouche.
Yep. He's the only one that ever argued.
Used to run for president every year.
Never give up. And they have permanently targeted America to go down the road of defeat. And it's beginning to look like, because how would we win a ground war in the Ukraine, Syria?
You can't.
We can't. We don't even have enough troops.
You can't.
What are we going to do? Draft the millennial generation that is the most obese generation in our country's history? How are we going to defend our own country?
Well, we can't do that either, can we?
No.
Thank God we have people who are law-abiding gun owners in this
country.
That's
precisely why they want to take away your gun rights, people.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
They have to take away your gun rights, legalize the use of what is illicit drugs today, and give you a universal paycheck every month to shut you up and make you sit down like the dunce that you probably might be.
$1,000 a month, huh?
$1,000 a month.
Make it $2,000. Let's go to Archer in Maui in Hawaii. Archer, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Oh, good evening, gentlemen. Thank you both very much.
Sure thing.
In 1945, in August, I was in Vermont. My father was in the executive offices of the White House, where he had been for a couple of years before the war. The day after we dropped a bomb in Nagasaki, he was directed to come to New York, and I was directed to get on a train to meet him. And for the next week, we stayed in Manhattan, where four times during the week, he took me with him out to Lake Success, where the United Nations was doing what they were doing. This is long before they built it on Manhattan. The takeaway for me that he wanted to be me to be very, very clear about was that when the nations were united, and I might not see this fully accomplished in my lifetime, but I would certainly have an opportunity to watch it in progress, that once the nations were united and the United Nations were one, then all national sovereignty would have been a thing of the past and would have been dissolved. And that was the general overall pattern. That's what it was all about.
That's correct. And Winston Churchill Jr. wrote a book on the subject. The idea has been out there for generations. And the American people don't read nonfiction. That's the problem. We don't even have philosophy departments at our basic best universities any longer because nobody will take the courses. The United Nations implied getting rid of nation-state sovereignty. C.P. Kindenberger from Yale, that I quoted in my book, the first thing I found in his text was the nation-state, sovereign nation-state is about finished as a unit in the world. We better get used to it. It's been out there. I have 30 books on getting rid of national sovereignty of each nation-state, but the real target is the United States.
Of course, we're the giant.
We're the light. But not any longer.
Rick in Minneapolis, wildcard line. Rick, go ahead.
Yeah, George, I talked to you before. I'm the ex-Detroit, ex-Minneapolis cop.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Thanks for calling again, Rick.
Yeah. I had a question for Craig, because he mentioned Eldridge Cleaver. And what I wanted to know, Craig, because you're so right on about everything, was Cleaver actually a dyed-in-the-wool bona fide activist, or did he work for the government?
No, he was for real.
Just real?
He was a real thing. He did a long time in prison, but when he got out, he denounced all of that. In fact, he coached me the first appearance I had to make on stage. He coached me.
You're kidding me.
Three nights in a row. No, he was genuine. He was for real. And he was a scary dude, I have to tell you.
Did you like him?
As a man, absolutely. He was everything that you would have to say. Well, you understand he was trained by the Russians, the Cubans. He trained in China. He was a weapons expert on my level, and I was trained by the United States government. So, you know, we hit it off immediately. And, yeah, he was for real. But, of course, he was also a real terrorist also. But he did reform. He did see what he had done, participated in, was wrong. And he became a Christian.
All right. Next up, Edward in Wyckoff, New Jersey. Thanks, Edward. Go ahead.
Mr. Hewlett, when you were on, I listened with more attention than to anyone in the media.
Well, that's a great compliment.
They should have you on the whole show at least once a month.
Edward, of course, is Craig Hewlett's PR man.
Time of universal deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. In New Jersey, where I am, I own a home, small home on a lot 50 by 108 feet. That's all. It's 68 years old. I've been here since I was 5. But in New Jersey, if you want a home, you don't own it. If you have a deed, it's a kind of a constricted contract to pay rent to a feudal plutocracy. And 2/3 of that plutocracy is the management of the public schools, which is done by what I call a board of miseducation. I have been campaigning for 15 years for property tax relief for distressed homeowners without relief, but I am still acting. I'm still in progress with that, writing extensively. I could explain if I had more time. I have 2 questions. One, what would you do if you were here to succeed with this purpose? And secondly, this is just a different question. Can you identify the recent scientific report that affirmed what I already knew, that within 100 years, life on this planet will be globally extinct from overpopulation and resource exhaustion? And it's astounding that there is no attention to this in the media.
And what was your first question, Ed?
If you were a resident in New Jersey, like myself, I'm at 100% taxation, by the way. I should have mentioned that. I'm 72.
What do you mean 100% taxation?
Well, the property taxes are 100% of my income.
Oh, they eat up everything.
Yes, literally.
How do you make it?
I've had some assistance from a sister, but she's not going to continue this much longer. And
sell the house, right?
Well, it's my. I would have to explain in detail why I'm not doing that.
Okay. Well, you know what? I probably can't give you an answer for the first one. The second one, I think there's a belief. I don't think. I know there's a belief system of the gold collar workers. Samuel P. Huntington calls the globalists gold collar workers that have no allegiance to any nation state. But I've met them. I've been in their boardrooms. When I was a young man, I was a consultant to 3 or 4 of the largest corporations in the world. And these men, all I can say is their detachment from reality is pristine. They actually believe that with a computer readout and their great wisdom, power, and wealth, that they'll be mining the moon in 50 years.
Or an asteroid.
These people are completely out of touch, and they are almost to a man and a woman the definition of malignant narcissism. You can't criticize them. You can't disagree with them. All you could do is shut up and bow. You've never seen the tyranny
and kiss the
that
ring.
An economic corporate elite have. You've never seen
okay,
that.
Okay, what's
kind
the
of
goal,
tyranny.
Though, Craig? What do they really want? I mean, they've got more money than they need right now, right?
There's no such thing as enough. That's what I mean by a malignant narcissist.
Ugh.
It's a malignancy. It's a cancer. There's something wrong with Archer Daniels Midland's Dwayne Andreas. He needs a psychiatrist. He's as fundamentally flawed as a human being as Bruce Jenner, for heaven's sakes. You need to understand who you're dealing with. The reason all the corporations joined Hitler, financed Hitler, joined Stalin, financed Stalin, and every other tyrant throughout the world, is they're in agreement.
Yes.
The
obviously.
Largest corporate magnates, the Rockefellers, the Kissingers, the Bush family, they are in agreement with totalitarian regimes. They hate, and I mean they spit the word out, democracy. They hate it.
See, I still think we're going to win.
Well, you know, Joy, I love that optimism, but it doesn't help me at all.
You and I will be there standing, holding the flag, believe me.
Well, I'll probably be standing, holding the flag with the flak vest, body armor, and I'll be carrying my FN 5.7.
Let's go, Ed, in Tulsa, Oklahoma now. Go ahead, Eddie. Thanks.
Yeah, George, thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
Mr. Hewlett, I just want to tell you, I really appreciate the information that you're putting out there. I've been researching all of this for the last 15, 16 years. The global elite has such a tight grip on the world, and specifically the United States of America, because that's the only thing standing in the way of the global governing body of having full, total control. They've got to bring the United States of America down to do it. But I was going to ask you, I guess you're aware that they're in the education system as well.
Oh, God, yes.
And this all started back in the 1960s. I'm a baby boomer, and right after John F. Kennedy, he was the last sitting president that occupied the White House after the coup d'etat took place. They kicked it into high gear. Then you had your drug culture. Vietnam War went into high gear. I know I came up with the draft in 68, and I told my buddies back then, I said, look at these kids out here burning their draft cards, acting crazy. I thought something is wrong. And that generation, my generation, is largely responsible for allowing the global elites to get control of our country like they have. They're in the education system from cradle to death. 1980, they started replacing university teachers with extreme liberal-leaning college professors that taught anti-American sentiment and totally anti-capitalism. Everything that took to build this great nation, they were teaching just the opposite of that in the university. Now, not to say that they're all that way, but as a whole, children have been dumbed down. Now, you got Common Core, Jeb Bush, the Bilderbergers, they want Common Core in the education system. And all that is a way to dumb down students, telling you 2 and 1 makes 4. Now, I'm just giving you an example. You know, Common Core, all it is just a way to dumb children down. But the thing of it is, they've got such a tight grip on every facet of our life worldwide, and specifically this country. I don't see that it could be reversed unless you could get control of the government, got control of the education system, revamped all of it completely, got rid of all the college professors, and brought in new college professors that lean towards our Constitution and the American way of life, life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, back to the philosophy that it took to build this great nation. But the problem of it is, this global elite has been around for 100 years, back when my dad was alive during World War II. Even then, the Bushes were, you know, the global elites had their hands in World War II, like you said earlier tonight, Prescott Bush, he helped fund the Nazis, him and the Dulles family. You know, and it just, I tell you what, prior to 9/11, which it didn't take me long to figure out that that was planned. That was a planned event so they could start this war over in the Middle East to create chaos, destabilization in the Middle East, and, of course, worldwide, ultimately. And, of course, out of chaos comes order. You know, that's the socialist plan, right? And I started studying. I didn't know a lot about government prior to 9/11. I worked every day, worked my butt off, and I knew who the president was, vice president, and that was it. But when 9/11 happened, to get my attention off losing the eyesight at the time, I started focusing on what was going on, and I thought, something's wrong here. What would bring this country to the point where the World Trade Center would be brought down like that? Man, I got on the Internet. I took computer classes, you know, a few months after my eyesight went out on me, learning how to use a computer using, there's about 1,000 keystrokes you have to use to operate a computer without eyesight.
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, and man, the more I dove into it and the more I learned, I have total, total disdain for the government. I absolutely, and I'm not ashamed to say it at all.
Now hit the brakes right now. With everything you've just said, let's get to one more thing that the American people need to understand. Everything that you've just said, the position you are taking, you are what the government refers to as an anti-government entity. And Homeland Security has issued a document naming the characteristics of domestic terrorism, and this gentleman, right along with Craig Hewlett, is listed in a dozen different places, along with the Mormons, any kind of political movement from the Green Party to the John Birch Society, anybody that stores food, anybody that wants to be off the grid and self sufficient, the way you live. Every one of these categories are listed as terrorism under the Homeland Security watch list. And I've got the document. It was declassified. I put it on the website. So pay attention, okay? Homeland Security is now the second largest enforcement agency in the United States. It's almost the size of the Pentagon. Every federal agency from ETA, FDA, the Weather Service, has created a law enforcement arm. The FDA has a law enforcement arm. The Weather Service has a law enforcement arm. And they're buying up millions of rounds of ammunition, body armor, AR-15s, M4s actually, full automatic, and they're called personal defense weapons. They are arming the federal government.
What do they want it for, Craig? What do they want it for? Thanks so much. Craig Hewlett, our special guest. Next up, Bob Mitchell joins us as we take a little walk on the paranormal side now.